We're talking about what sparks creativity in this hour. Sometimes it's a time and place. Take Vienna at the turn of the century. Think what it would have been like to be alive then. Gustav Klimt was painting erotic golden canvases. Gustav Mahler was writing symphonies. Schoenberg was inventing atonal music. Psychoanalysis was in the air. And in the middle of all of it was a woman who is usually written about as a kind of muse, or femme fatale. A woman who inspired a lot of those artists. Her name was Alma Mahler. And novelist Mary Sherratt thinks she could have been an artist herself if she hadn't been a woman.
She was like the who's who of Vienna in the 20th century is associated with her. So Klimt chased her across Italy to give her her first kiss when she was just a teenager. Gustav Mahler met her at a dinner party. She was 22, he was 41. He saw her, fell madly in love, and proposed only a few weeks later. She had first an affair and then later married Walter Gropius, the architect who founded the Bauhaus movement. She had this passionate affair with Oskar Kokoschka, who immortalized his passion for her in his painting Bride of the Wind that shows the two of them locked in an eternal embrace. And then her third husband was Franz Werfel, the poet and novelist. She loved genius more than anything else. If she thought you were a genius, she would fall in love with you.
Well, so she was really attracted to genius and to these brilliant men. What attracted them to her?
She was beautiful. She was on fire with enthusiasm. If you read her diaries, it's just full of this effervescent passion, this kind of joy of life, of wanting to experience everything life had to offer. She had so much energy, so much enthusiasm, and if she believed in you, she would do anything for you.
You paint her as so much more than this woman who catered to and supported famous, brilliant men. I mean, you describe her as an early feminist and, of course, a composer in her own right.
Well, she was an incredibly talented young person. She was studying composition with Alexander von Zemlinsky, who was also the teacher of Arnold Schoenberg. But she really, really longed to be a composer. And we know from her diaries that she composed over 100 Lieder, or art songs, several instrumental pieces, and the beginnings of an opera.
Wow. Is any of that music left?
The music that remains are 17 surviving songs. We don't know what happened to the rest of her music. When she fled Austria during the Nazi Anschluss, she left her music behind, so it could have been lost, or just maybe she destroyed it herself for whatever reason, we don't know.
She fell in love with Gustav Mahler, and he with her, and he was an established, famous composer, quite a bit older. And he told her that if she married him, she had to give up composing. Why?
I think it's really hard for us to understand the enormous wall of misogyny that women in turn of the century Vienna were up against. Vienna was even backwards compared to other places in the Western world. The university had only barely opened its door to some women. And women who did strive for a livelihood in the arts were mocked and ridiculed as the third sex. The pseudoscience of the day said if you did this, you would damage your uterus and you wouldn't be able to have babies. And it's also the age of Freud, where women who kind of push against the status quo are diagnosed as hysterical, literally perceived to be mentally ill.
Was Mahler threatened by her?
I can read a passage from his letter if you want me to.
Sure.
Before we speak again, you must renounce everything superficial. All vanity and outward show concerning your individuality and your own work. Would it be possible for you to regard my music as your music from now on? As for your music, I prefer not to discuss that in detail right now, but how can you imagine both husband and wife being composers? Have you any idea how ridiculous and degrading such a rivalry would become? You must become the person I need if we are to be happy together. My wife and not my colleague.
Did anybody in her circle or her family say, Alma, what are you doing? Don't marry him.
Well, her mother actually advised against the match, but she was still under very strong pressure to marry. So if she didn't marry Gustav, it would have to be some other guy, maybe some boring guy who wasn't a genius.
You know, on the one hand, this seems like a sadly familiar story of male egoism and the repression of a woman's creative life. But it also seems like the story of a woman who maybe didn't have the courage to claim her own life and a woman who sabotaged herself. How do you see her?
Shortly before she married Gustav Mahler, she wrote this passage in her diary that I thought was so moving, and it really says so much about her. I'm just trying to find it. January 16, 1902. I have two souls. I know it. Am I a liar? When he looks at me so happily, what a profound feeling of ecstasy. Is that a lie too? No, no, I must cast out my other soul. The one which is so far ruled must be banished. I must strive to become a real person. She wanted to be a composer. That was her passion, and that was her greatest regret when she married, that she lost that part of herself. But that part of herself never died. She was never able to kind of resign herself to be that just a Hausfrau that kept burning inside her. And I think the pivotal moment for her when she just couldn't go on in this kind of self-sacrifice anymore was when she and Gustav Mahler moved to New York. It's a long story, but he had to step down from the Vienna Court Opera due to an anti-Semitic smear campaign against him in the Viennese press. Suddenly, Alma is in New York, surrounded by these really powerful, liberated women like she has never met in Austria. And that made her realize that all the conflict she felt inside herself was not because there was something wrong with her, but because there was something wrong with the whole life she was meant to lead, that she wasn't sick, that the life she was meant to lead was sick. So then you see her kind of taking back her own power. Even within this marriage to Gustav Mahler, she kind of has her own declaration of independence. She takes back her own creativity and also the freedom of her own sexuality, and she returns to composing.
This book is part of a larger project, which you've called Writing Women Back into History. First of all, thank you.
You're welcome.
What are some of the ways they've been written out?
Well, because a lot of history focuses on things like wars and land grabs, this kind of litany of great political rulers that is very, very male-centric. And for women's history, what really strikes me is the women who do stand out and claim their power are often the most maligned. Traditionally, Alma almost appears as this kind of evil woman, this evil femme fatale. You can think of Laurel Thatcher Ulrich's famous observation that well-behaved women seldom make history. That could have been written about Alma. If she had been a good little Hausfrau who behaved herself, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
Mary Sherratt's historical novel about Alma Mahler is called Ecstasy,